Today on Maine Calling, a Your Vote 2024 special, the race to represent Maine's 1st Congressional District. Maine's 1st District is up for grabs this fall, as incumbent Democrat Shelley Pingree defends a seat she has held for 16 years. Her Republican challenger will be decided a week from today. That contest is between Ron Russell, a retired career soldier, and Andrew Piantedosi, a self-described tech professional. Both are political newcomers who say they'll offer a distinct choice to voters. I'm Keith Shortall, and today on the program we'll talk with each candidate about why they're running in a district that is a long-time Democratic stronghold, and about their priorities if elected to Congress. And as always, we want to hear from you. A Your Vote 2024 special, Maine Calling, is coming up.
Maine Calling on Demand is made possible by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn how you can get involved at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. Welch and Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth, from investments to trustee services. More at welchforbes.com. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering healthcare, education, and support to island and coastal Downey's communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today, as part of Maine Public's Your Vote 2024 coverage, I'll be speaking with the two GOP candidates vying to take on incumbent Democrat Shelley Pingree to represent Maine's 1st Congressional District. The two Republicans in the 2nd District primary contest declined our invitation to be interviewed. Joining us for the first half of today's show is Ron Russell. He served for 30 years in the U.S. Army as an airborne ranger and special forces qualified Green Beret. He retired in 2006 and worked for a small defense contractor and then helped form a small business. He moved back to Maine in June of 2021. We invite you to join the conversation. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call. The number 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Ron Russell, welcome to Maine Calling.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Why are you the best candidate to represent the Republican Party in this race this fall against Shelley Pingree?
I think just the breadth and depth of my experience speaks for itself there. 30 years in the United States Army, understand what it's like to resource a military capability. I have deployed to 60 or so countries around the world, and I've got to see how other people live. And I can assure the audience that the United States is, in fact, the best country in the world based upon what I have seen. But living that life for 30 years gives me an understanding of how the military works and where we should be involved or not be involved. After I retired, I started a small business with three friends, and we grew that to a large business. So I got to see the advantages or the disadvantages that the government provided by way of rules and regulations. In some cases, they were very helpful. In some cases, they were not. And unfortunately, I would have to say in most cases, they were not. So I know what it's like to run a small business. I've signed the front of paychecks for up to 150 employees. We probably employed over 400 employees in the course of 15 years. So I must say that experience signing those paychecks and providing for the livelihoods of that many folks was also a very rewarding experience. Totally different from my military experience, however.
Yeah. You were born in Fort Fairfield and raised on a potato farm there. Your mother was an elementary school teacher, and your father was a farmer. How important is it, do you think, to have roots in the state of Maine to represent it?
I think it's very important. That's where we get our our culture, our understanding of what right and wrong is, of the value of hard work from my dad, the value of a good education from my mother, self-discipline, taking accountability for your actions. Those were all lessons that were taught to my brother and three sisters and I, and we were all fairly successful as a result of that. Those lessons were all sprinkled with a good touch of sense of humor, and all of my siblings share a great sense of humor. And I have to tell you, for me, that sense of humor got me through some very, very difficult times. In addition, we were Catholic, raised Catholic, and so we went to church every Sunday. And that underpinning has helped me again throughout my military career. I must say, my father passed away when I was a senior or a freshman at West Point, 2 weeks after Christmas vacation, and my mom had passed away when I was a sophomore in high school. And so I lost my faith a little bit there after my father's passing. But my father told us growing up, at some point in time, you will need to turn to someone for assistance or guidance, and that person will be Jesus Christ. And that also has gotten me through some very difficult times. So I still say I have a strong faith.
You've never run for elected office. Why start with...
I ran for a local legislature when I first got back to Maine, and was beaten by a lady who was running this time again, and she is a quality candidate, and we hope to push her over the finish line this time.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry I got that wrong. But this is kind of a big leap from there. Why sort of start this political career in earnest with Congress?
Because when I was in North Carolina, before I moved back to Maine, I saw what was happening to the nation. And I did not like what was happening to the nation. This is a nation that I've served for over 45 years there. And my business was a DOD-related contracting business. And then, of course, 30 years in the Army. And I did not like what I saw. And I thought, I felt helpless in North Carolina. I knew that I was going to be returning to Maine, but I thought the only way that I could help was to run for a federal office. And really, that's why I moved back to Maine, to be able to do that. I moved back quicker than I thought I was going to, because of what happened in 2020. But that's why I'm actually running for Congress, at a federal level there, because the nation needs to be put back on the correct track. Maine also needs to be put back on the correct track, I think. But we have great candidates here this time to make that happen. So there's really two battles that are going to be occurring. The battle here in Maine to take over the legislature and the Senate, and in a couple of years, eventually the governorship, and then the battle at the federal level. Both of those battles have to be fought and won. And I'm fighting the one at the federal level.
So what would be the first priority in Washington for Congressman-elect Ron Russell?
I think we have to get the economy back on track. And I think actually the first step in doing that is to become energy independent once again. Everything that our economy runs on is involved with energy in some way, shape, or form. And we feel that directly as individual citizens. We're paying more for gas. We're paying more for heating oil. We're paying more for electricity, all as a result of the increase in fossil fuel cost. When we get that back on track and become energy independent again, those costs will go down. And as a result, I believe the costs that have risen as a result of inflation will also go back down to where they were 4 years ago.
So do you believe in efforts to expand renewables over time and move away from fossil fuels?
I do believe that renewables is the future. However, I don't believe that renewables is the future as quickly as we are trying to get there. I think I'll just use electronic vehicles as an example. The infrastructure is not there to support electronic vehicle use, particularly in a state like Maine. I actually think wind and solar will go the way of the buffalo and will be replaced by other sources of renewable energy that are far more efficient and effective. I don't know why we got away from nuclear energy, but we are on the precipice of making a breakthrough for nuclear fusion, and that will be a significant game changer. Until that happens, I think we ought to get back to our nuclear facilities that use fission as a method of generating electricity. We have tremendous hydroelectric resources here, or capability resources, that we are not taking advantage of in Maine. And I think we need to get back to our use of hydroelectric power there as well. And that is a tremendous renewable resource. There are a lot of areas that we need to expend research and development dollars into to eventually become a renewable energy country.
So, and to be clear, what's the issue you have with solar?
Well, Maine is vacation land, and when we cover our beautiful state with solar panels that contain toxic materials, and if damaged, you know, those could leak out into to the ground. And the amount of solar panels required to cover up our beautiful vacation land just doesn't make any sense to me. It's not as effective and efficient as it needs to be. I have solar panels on my house, so to say that I'm not a fan of solar energy would not be accurate. But when I drive north to Augusta and I look out into our pristine marshlands and I see solar panels there, that bothers me a little bit, particularly because some of those solar panels have been damaged by hail and have leaked into the underlying terrain. And that's not a good thing. Solar panels have a life expectancy as well and will need to be replaced. Now we've got a toxic panel that we need to find some way to dispose of without injuring our economy or our environment, rather, more so than what we already have.
Sure. And do you believe that climate change, as you know, climate change is happening and is caused by human activity, and that's how we need to respond to it?
The jury is still out there from my perspective. I think lately I've seen a significant amount of information that says carbon dioxide is not a bad thing, it's a good thing. And I recall that from my biology chemistry days there and photosynthesis. And so I have some questions in my mind. I've read a lot of articles of late that basically say we've been living a hoax here for any number of years. And you've heard the rationale as much as I have. We had global cooling, then we had global warming. Then now it's climate change. We've changed the name several times. I think what we are describing is what occurs naturally in our environment. You know, we've had ice ages in the past. We've had times when the ice melted away to create what we have right now, where the earth warmed. So the jury is still out there from my perspective. I think we need to look into this a whole lot more than what we have already.
You point to inflation as a major issue for you. If you were in Congress, what would you do? What can Congress do, do you think, to lower inflation at this time?
As I mentioned before, I think the initial catalyst to the increased inflation was to get away from energy independence. And I think when we return, that's going to come a long way to start lowering inflation. The inflation rate is at 3.4% right now, I believe. So it has come down from 9%, but that damage has been done in terms of prices. My oldest daughter can't take her six-person family out to McDonald's anymore. It's just not cost-effective to be able to do that because of inflation. In order to mitigate inflation, the Biden administration has increased interest rates on getting capital. Those interest rates really have risen to a point where, in some cases now, young families or our senior citizens can't afford housing anymore to purchase new housing. So there's something wrong there. If we get inflation back under control, those interest rates should come down and back to where they were to make housing more affordable, which is, housing affordability is a huge problem right now for all across the nation.
You say in your campaign materials that it's time to end the divisive political discourse and that we are Americans first and then Democrats, Republicans later. How would you rank the importance of political identity? Is it second to being an American? Is it third? How do you see how important, your political affiliation is?
I would say it's second to being an American. We are not getting anything accomplished in Washington, D.C., or very few things. Any law that is passed along party lines is bad legislation, from my perspective, because the equities of the American people are not firmly divided along party lines. So someone's equities are not being taken into account when bills are passed along party lines. The sense of decency in Washington, D.C. is gone. And we saw it as late as yesterday during the hearings in where Dr. Fauci was being questioned. We have to get back to some sort of decency and working together to come up with solutions to the common problems that are facing all Americans. And that's what I meant when I was talking about the divisiveness. We really have to get that fixed.
So compromise is not a dirty word for you.
Compromise is not a dirty word. Compromise of principles is not what I'm talking about. In the unit I commanded, we had a rule that said your boundaries are your moral, legal, and ethical boundaries. We knew what the legal boundaries were. We know what was within the law and what was not within the law. Morality is really a kind of a personal choice, but we got an idea about an individual's morality when and his ethics as well when we did our selection process. So we've kind of knew that they were basically had the right moral and ethical underpinnings when we hired them. And so those are the guidelines that I'm going to use in Washington, D.C. I used to tell my kids, do what is right. And I think that's the approach I'm going to take in Washington, D.C.
So you've described yourself as a Susan Collins Republican, which is another way one might say moderate, but you're also an unabashed Trump supporter. Do those two square? I mean, how where would you if how would you square those two?
Those two descriptions, I don't know that I've ever said that I'm an unabashed Trump supporter or that I forget your term you
Oh,
used
the
for Susan
Susan Collins. Okay. Yeah, I'm just
Collins. Right. So
I'm quoting
I
from
am a
something I'd read, but it might be so go ahead, yeah.
Susan Collins fan, and I also am a Donald Trump fan. Susan Collins, I think, has represented the people from Maine along the lines of what it is I'm talking about. I think Olympia Snowe was also a great example because they don't always vote with the Republican Party in Washington, D.C. I look at it as they are voting to represent the people that elected them to represent them in Washington, D.C.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to bring, let's bring in, let me see if I can bring in Phil. Let me, no, I've lost calls. I'm sorry. But Phil was calling to ask, which is actually my next question, so it works out fine anyway. Do you believe the 2020 election was legitimate, illegitimate, or stolen, as former President Trump has claimed?
I think President Biden is the legitimate president of the United States. Having said that, there are significant questions in my mind about the 2020 election. We know, actually, there's no question about it, that the federal government caused social media companies to squelch information that might not have been positive for the Biden campaign. We know that to be true. We know that the document that was prepared by Hillary Clinton's campaign was found to be a false document. We know that the 50 former intelligence representatives' claims about the Hunter Biden laptop were all false. There's a lot of examples like that. We know that for that election, governors and secretaries of state changed the legislative process for their individual states. And we know that the Constitution says that the legislative process, or the election process, I'm sorry, is determined by the state legislatures, not by the secretaries of state and not by the governors of the states. President Trump filed, I think, 63 lawsuits or something like that. None of those cases were ever heard in court because of a lack of standing or whatever the reason was. But those are valid questions that I still have in my own mind. What we need to do going further, going into the future here, is to make sure that those types of things don't happen. Voters from every party need to have faith, trust, and confidence in their elections, that their vote has been counted and that it hasn't been offset or negated by someone who should not have voted. And that's really where we need to get. I think we have a lot of Americans that don't have that faith, trust, and confidence in our election process.
Yeah. Only a few minutes left here, so I want to get to some foreign policy. Do you believe the U.S. should do more to try to stop the violence in Gaza, and specifically that Congress should take action, if to the extent that it can?
I think the violence in Gaza is a result of Israel trying to eradicate Hamas. And I think they are doing everything within their power to try to reduce the civilian casualties that are occurring in the process of them trying to eliminate Hamas. I think we ought to support Israel in that endeavor as much as we can. Any guidance on how to run that war, to me, will fall on deaf ears. Israel knows what it has to do. They are taking into account reducing the amount of damage that is being done to the non-military population, the civilian population, and us providing them any advice and assistance on how to do that, I think, will fall on deaf ears.
Do you believe the U.S. should do more to help Ukraine defend itself from Russia?
I think we understand what the requirements are from Ukraine. And I don't believe we have validated those requirements to my satisfaction. As an example, I believe we are paying for, you know, the equivalent of a 401k fund or a retirement fund for civil servants in Ukraine. That falls way outside of what I would consider valuable assistance to them. We have given them, I think, $110 billion. I know one of their largest needs is artillery shells and ammunition. You can buy an awful lot of artillery shells that they need. need and the ammunition that they need with $110 billion. So something tells me that our oversight of that process has fallen a little bit short. And we've given them money that they have used for things that we should not have validated or funded.
Yeah, and with that, we're out of time. That's very, very quick, 20 minutes. But Ron Russell, I want to thank you for joining us and telling us about yourself and sharing your thoughts today. Thanks very much.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Ron Russell is facing off against Andrew Piantedosi in Maine's 1st Congressional District GOP primary contest 1 week from today. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk with Andrew Piantedosi about why he believes he's the best choice to take on Congresswoman Shelley Pingree this fall. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today we're speaking with the two candidates running in the upcoming Republican primary, which takes place on June 11th. You just heard from Ron Russell. With me now is Andrew Piantedosi. He's a tech professional and part-time teacher in the South Portland schools. He's a graduate of St. Anselm College, where he studied government and history. Join the conversation. Email us talk@mainpublic.org. Comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, the number 1-800-399-3566. Andrew Piantedosi, welcome to Maine Calling.
Thank you so much for having me.
So we'll start at the top again here. Why are you the best candidate, do you think, to represent the Republican Party in this race?
That's a great question. And I've been preaching this for the past several weeks as we approach the primary itself. I think we ought to be talking about deliverables and not about promises. So I'll tell you a bit about what I've been doing for the past 13 months. So I've stood up against anti-Semitism, and also everything I say is demonstrable. So you can Google it, you can look it up online. I stood up against anti-Semitism back in December when it reared its ugly head in some congressional hearings. I believe it was December 9th. I stood up against the president of MIT, UCLA, and Harvard. Correct me if I'm wrong. I was elected as a national delegate to the Republican National Convention. Very proud of that. I've been an advocate for school choice. So my own daughter is 5 years old. She was diagnosed with autism 2 years ago. And a big reason why I got into this race was is family, effectively. Is, you know, I see Maine as my adoptive family, having moved here 5 years ago. But my wife is a Mainer, and my children are Mainers, third generation Mainers now. Fighting for my daughter's right as a quote unquote disabled child. She's autistic and was diagnosed with autism 2 years ago. I fought for her right to be reintegrated into the Cape Elizabeth school system. And they wanted to send my daughter to school 45 minutes away. And my wife and I are both working parents, and that just was not a feasible prospect for the two of us. I've been a staunch supporter for the Second Amendment. I stood against Shannon Bellows when she wanted to disavow 7,000 signatures from Trump supporters to get him onto the ballot. I've stood with Maine fishermen. Actually, later today, I'll be in Harpswell on a lobster boat with some of my folks in, I don't know if you all know NEFSA, but the New England Fisheries Strategic Alliance. Proud to stand with them shoulder to shoulder as they fight offshore wind, as well as injustices imposed upon them by big government. These are all demonstrable evidence of why I'd be a tremendous representative to the U.S. Congress. Talk is cheap, and that's a big moniker of our campaign. So promises, empty words and empty promises are just that. We've been doing this for the last 13 months and really working incredibly hard.
Yeah. Wait, where were you raised?
I was raised in Connecticut. So I'm a New England guy. I think I think the only New England state I've never spent time in is Rhode Island, and I don't have any plans of leaving Maine. So I went to school in New Hampshire. I was raised in Connecticut. I met my wife in the Boston area, and I'm so proud to be living here.
You mentioned your sort of touches with politics, but no previous political experience as a candidate, right?
Not as a candidate, but I did spend time at St. Anselm College, very immersed in the political scene there. As St. Anselm is the home of the New Hampshire Institute of Politics, so that was a politics and history was a big part of my experience there for 4 years.
But that it seems like a major position you're running here for Congress. Why did you decide to start your sort of political career with Congress?
That's a great question. And I've worked for Fortune 500 companies over the past 15 years, solving complex problems with complex solutions. And, I've seen, and primarily in cybersecurity. So also a big issue for me is national defense and the defense of our critical infrastructure. And I've seen that day in and day out, and coupled with my experience in history and politics, and then fighting the good fight with my daughter, if you asked a younger version of me, would I be immersed in getting effectively Medicare for my daughter? So my daughter gets Katie Beckett, which is an extension of MaineCare, which is also an extension of Medicare. If you asked me 10 years ago if this is a fight I'd be fighting, I'd say you're crazy. But here I am. So I'm wise beyond my years, not by choice, but out of necessity. I think as someone deeply immersed in the community and having worked solving these complex problems, I think I'm a unique problem solver in that respect.
So as you said, you're interested in issues that are important to families, inflation, education, and then I've read you're concerned about homelessness, housing, government transparency, which all are not listed on the typical conservative checklist as priorities, at least in Washington of late. Would you say you're a moderate Republican if we at the risk of labeling?
I would say I'm a generational Republican. So there is a generational divide between folks like myself who are willing to step up and run for office and my competitor, effectively. These are issues that my generation have faced. My wife and I have been lucky to do well in business, and I'm very, well aware of that. Having said that, there are a lot of families that are being boxed out of the housing market, and I find that disturbing. And if this continues, we're going to have a much broader problem on our hands. So, long-winded way of saying I think a term I've coined is generational Republican, and I think we need more folks like myself.
Well, let's go a little further into that then. What would what's the generational Republican position on, for example, inflation, and what could Congress do? What would you do if elected to curb it?
Well, let's be honest. There hasn't been a budget passed in I believe 20 years or something along those lines. So, how do you balance the budget without an actual budget? And then the Appropriations Committee, of which Shelley Pingree is a ranking member, is in control of how we're spending dollars. There's a tremendous amount of pork. There's I don't agree with or abide by this omnibus bill sort of mantra that we've taken on. So, I'll give you an example. So last year when we were protecting the lobstermen, there was a 7,200 page bill that by law you had 72 hours to read. Thankfully the NOAA bill, or the protection of our lobstermen, was at the bottom of the heap, and we knew where it was. But physically and fundamentally, it's impossible to read 7,200 pages in 72 hours. I don't care how many staffers you have. So the omnibus sort of mantra has got to go. We need to start passing bills. Diplomacy domestically has taken a backseat to partisan politics, and we need younger members in Congress, and that's the bottom line, because we have a generational divide, but we also have this sort of political dynasty problem, if you will, wherein folks are literally dying in their seats. So I mean look no further than Dianne Feinstein and some others who I won't call out by name, but that they should not be in office and have been for 30-40 years.
Are you a supporter of former President Trump?
I am.
And do you believe that he is sort of is now the standard bearer for the party, that his core values are the core values of the Republican Party? Or let me put it a different way. Is there anything that he has done that you would disagree with or question either during his presidency or after?
You saw him make light of a disabled reporter a couple of years ago. That bothered me. I'm a supporter of Donald Trump. I believe his policies on domestic and foreign policy make this country a safer place and a more sustainable place for younger folks like myself. I believe Donald Trump is proactive instead of reactive, and I do not believe Joe Biden is. I believe Joe Biden is reactive in nature. I mean, look at what's about to happen today. I'm not sure if it has yet, but with his quote unquote border policy, the border is very porous and open. And I have two older sisters that live in Texas, and they're terrified of, safety and the like. Let's be honest, I think America was more secure under Donald Trump. I think we had fewer wars under Donald Trump. And one caveat I will say, I want to make sure that, I will not be a rank and file member of Congress. So I will not blindly abide by everything the Republicans say. I will make compromise without compromising my morals or my personal beliefs. And that's a big caveat, I believe, as it relates to future generations of politicians moving forward.
Do you believe the 2020 election was legitimate, or, as the former President Trump has claimed, stolen?
Yeah, I get asked this question a lot, and I think it's almost a gotcha question. And I have not been avowed of any evidence that would lead me to believe that it was. But if I get into Congress and there is, then that's a different discussion. But, as of now, we're 3 years on from that election, so I don't think that's really a non-starter for me.
Right, but the Mr. Trump continuously raises it, so sort of keeping it alive, and it has become kind of a test for Republican candidates to a loyalty test to repeat that. And so I think that's why we're asking it of you now.
Yeah, I think what people will learn about me as a candidate is I think for myself, and I speak for my constituents. So yet again, if we President Trump and I happen to disagree on a couple of issues, I don't think that's a real deal breaker. And I'll leave it at that.
And I asked your opponent in the race the same question, so I'll ask you. Do you believe the electoral system in the U.S. is secure and accurate?
I have concerns about the nature of the electoral college. So, especially as Mainers, I think we should all, heed this warning, is that the electoral college was effectively built to represent smaller places that would not initially or originally get representation, like Maine and Montana and North Dakota, and the list goes on and on. If we're talking about a national popular vote, I think that clearly is in line with, you know, the votes in New York and Detroit and Atlanta and other, you know, urban centers, and that's concerning to me.
Let's go to energy policy. Do you, well, first of all, do you believe that climate change is caused by human activity, and is that the way to solve, to curb it?
So twofold. One, if we are to presuppose that climate change is in fact real, then we 100% need to address our foreign policy. So that includes the amount of CO2 gas that comes out of China, Vietnam, Laos, Malaysia, the Philippines, and the developing countries around them, as it relates to how we're experiencing different weather here in Maine. Mainers go out of their way to recycle, to you know, make sure we take care of our environment. Americans do as well. We have the cleanest energy in the world. We have carbon capture. You know, I could go on and on. I think foreign policy is often overlooked, and that's something we need to address on day one. The Chinese build a coal factory once, one coal factory every week.
So, but here at home, then, do you support efforts to develop renewables such as wind power or solar?
Oh, I'll make clear my position here is that offshore wind will never be on my radar, so to speak. I don't stand with it. I'm going on a fishing boat later today to talk to lobstermen. They are being decimated by offshore wind. There's superheated chlorinated water being pumped into offshore wind turbines. It's decimating the ground fish population. It's affecting the very whales that we claim to, you know, be so protective of. And I won't stand for it. So no offshore wind for me. Onshore wind, yes. And I think, you know, we're seeing more renewable ties with the turbines of onshore wind, with, you know, they're being ground into repurposed for concrete. Solar, I'm a little bit wary of. I believe that it's very toxic for our groundwater as well as for PFAS considerations. So that's something I would like to look into further.
So, and in the last half hour, your opponent in the race said that he would support, I think I'm getting this right, he would support renewable except for wind, and he doesn't like solar, but would support it in time, but it's too early and not effective at the moment. Is it a timing problem for you, or you just in general you oppose these technologies?
There's two problems with offshore wind. One is typically they're not bonded, so the majority of offshore wind that goes up is brought in by Dutch or Spanish or Portuguese companies. They're put in our waterways, and then there's no recourse when these technologies are sunsetted, so when they need to be taken down. And the same can be said about onshore wind. The other is that, you know, we need to be investing in additional resources from an energy perspective. Hydro, for some reason, Maine, I believe, could power the entire Northeast Corridor, or the at least the Northeast Corridor, with all of our hydro power. And we also ought to be investing in nuclear power as well. There's a stigma with nuclear power that ought not to be there. We could be leaders in energy in all of New England, and somehow we get stepped on by the Canadians and the folks from Massachusetts, and I don't believe in that.
So you're kind of aligned with your opponent on the energy issue in some ways, seems to be. He also mentioned, though, just now, nuclear power. How do you where do you stand on the prospects for returning to?
So nuclear power is now the safest, most sustainable form of power in the world. It's not the nuclear reactors of, I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank on the plant in Ukraine, Chernobyl, or, you know, Five Mile Island or Fukushima. Those are sort of the outliers, and it's a lot more condensed. It's a lot cleaner. Gone are the days of having these massive cooling stations. Nuclear could really set us apart from any other state in the country, and I'll support that.
Are you concerned about, though, we already have spent nuclear fuel on site in Wiscasset with...
I appreciate that. Yep. And I understand that, and I appreciate it. And again, I think that's, again, like from a, almost a bygone era wherein we didn't know, you know, we would produce nuclear waste and then we didn't know where to put it. I appreciate that there is nuclear waste in Wiscasset. I do. But to my point again is the fuel rods and the coolant and the material needed to provide nuclear power now is smaller, it's more condensed and would provide much smaller hazardous waste on a massive scale. So that's a valid question.
Yeah. So just in one last energy question. Here, you do believe that though we do need to move away from fossil fuels to eliminate them eventually, lower our dependence. How would you characterize your position?
Yeah, we certainly should. Maybe if we had a roadmap, I don't think there's a baked out roadmap, frankly, and that's what concerns me is that you know we're putting the cart before the horse, if you will, when it comes to renewable energy. So there was a report that came out that of the $7 billion over the past 4 or 5 years, they built 7 or 8 recharging stations in the country. So, you know, big government is not typically the harbinger of efficiency. Let's say that, and that's been proof positive of this sort of like green new energy deal that we have. We need to have a common sense discussion about how we transition. Let's also be honest, the majority of the electricity that is produced for these electric cars comes from burning coal. It comes from other sources as well, but and I know we don't burn coal here in Maine, but let's talk about nationally and have a broader discussion about where we're actually headed. And I think we're fooling ourselves with some of these green policies.
You mentioned the Chinese burning coal. So how would Congress, if you were elected, take action to stop the Chinese from building coal factories?
Well, there was a Paris Accord of which Donald Trump withdrew from. And I thought rightfully so. I mean, the Chinese were somehow allowed to continue to build coal factories and weren't really going to make any changes in their, in their infrastructure for another, you know, 7 or 8 years. So somehow the Chinese continue to get a pass. There's also a subcommittee in Congress for the CCP that takes into consideration a number of things, including infrastructure, energy, cybersecurity and national defense. So in many respects, and this is not just one, the Chinese continue to eat our lunch, and then they get a free pass on the national stage on the international stage rather. And I just don't understand it. So they need to be held to account.
Moving on with more foreign policy here. Do you believe the U.S. should do more to stop violence in Gaza?
I think that's a loaded question. I stand with the people of Israel. October 7th was a terrible, terrible act of violence. And let's be honest, Hamas is a terrorist organization, as is Hezbollah. The directors of Hamas don't even live, you know, on the peninsula. They live in Doha, Qatar. They take 80 to 85% of the money that is provided for humanitarian aid, and they pocket it. So I'm of a, you know, listen, war is hell. General Sherman said that during the Civil War, and it is, it's terrible. And I don't wish harm on anybody. But I do respect the right of the Israeli people to defend their sovereignty.
Yeah. Andrew Piantedosi, thank you so much for your time today. Appreciate the conversation.
Thank you for having me.
Andrew Piantedosi is running against Ron Russell in Maine's 1st Congressional District GOP primary. Voting takes place 1 week from today. Jane Donahue is our sound engineer today. Maine Calling is produced by Cindy Hahn and Jonathan Smith. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.